It is a Friday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch. Andrea Haines is here. We'll talk to her in just a minute, actually less than a minute. But I want to talk about something in my second half hour, too. Christopher Matthews is a writer for Axios. You know, Axios is a kind of a news digest that started from a couple of the guys who created Politico. Great site. But he has been writing about a couple of studies that we're going to talk to Christopher about. One is the sort of the degree inflation, I don't know if that's the right phrase, but now more and more jobs are requiring a bachelor's degree in order to get the job. And the thing is, you don't really need a bachelor's education to do the job. So what's happening there is we're creating this disparity. People who could use a good job, a leg up, aren't qualifying because they didn't go to college. And the economic divide's only getting greater. So that's coming up with Christopher Matthews in the second half hour. Right now we say hello to Andrea Haines. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
I really appreciate the fact that you took your time out of waiting in line here down the street.
With a few hundred of my closest friends over there.
I posted on Twitter a picture from up on the seventh floor. It's a really nice view of the new Apple store.
Yeah.
And the hundreds of people all dressed in black, shivering, waiting for an iPhone Dex.
10. If we can leave your readers knowing one hip thing, it's that they should be calling it the 10 and not the iPhone X.
So,
the 10 is on sale and people are waiting in line for it.
And the pre-orders went very quickly, right? So they pulled those back. And this is the one we've been waiting for a long time. Reviews are good. I still don't quite understand why anyone would be waiting in line for hours today for it.
They want to unlock their phone with their face, which seems like about the coolest thing, right?
That just sounds like a bar fight term.
A little facial recognition.
I'm going to unlock this phone with your face if you don't turn around. Okay, so there's that. Donald Trump is in the air, and he has proven something that you can tweet from over the Pacific Ocean, because he just tweeted a few minutes ago about Bo Bergdahl and the fact that he was not sentenced to jail. I think he called it
A disgrace,
was that it?
Yes.
But, you know, that's good that the president's got a long flight ahead of him and he's got his Twitter account back.
Got it back.
What happened?
So there was about 11 minutes yesterday evening when his Twitter account disappeared. And so, of course, that set off a wave of people wondering what the heck was going on.
Right.
Could it be something really crazy happening? Could it be that he deleted it in some kind of fit? Could one of his staff have deleted it? Could Twitter have deleted it? Because, you know, there are those that argue that Twitter should be getting rid of that account because it poses danger. So it really set off, you know, some quick wondering about what was going on.
I didn't think of because there are a lot of conspiracy theorists who follow him that they could have sort of, that could have fueled all of
that. Yeah, definitely. People noticed quickly and freaked out quickly.
And it was a ticked off worker?
So yes, right. Which is kind of an unbelievable ending. They would all be unbelievable endings, but this one is kind of literally someone, I guess, in their last act on the way out the door as a Twitter employee went out with a bang and took down the account, which is, you know, hilarious or awful, depending on how you look at it, but also obviously raises some questions about who has that power.
Right, exactly.
It's apparently only a few hundred employees at Twitter can do that. So, you know, obviously Twitter's going to have to look at how they're training employees who are walking out the door and what kind of power they have.
Has this person been identified at all? Or?
I don't think so. Well, I mean, I'm sure obviously they know, but in terms of, like, has it gone viral yet, you know, who the person is, I don't think so.
So if you're Twitter, this is bad news for you, even though, Donald Trump's account, even though they get headaches out of it, has been good for business.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And it was 11 minutes. So it was, you know, it wasn't forever. But if I were running Twitter, I would be, I guess, asking myself what kind of policies I needed to look at to make sure that kind of thing doesn't happen.
Did a star rise in the east during the 11 minutes of peace, or was there any sort of biblical?
You know, well, in town, it's kind of like it was a crazy few hours of news because everybody was freaking out about DNA info, both in Chicago and some other cities. And then this happened on top of it. And it's so 2017, right? There just constantly seem to be these big news events happening right on top of each other.
You know what? I'm glad you brought up DNA info because I was going to during the show. They announced yesterday, the owner, Joe Ricketts, announced that, you know, they weren't making money on it, so they were ending it. And regular listeners to this show know that Andrew Herman, a senior editor from DNA Info, comes on every Tuesday. He is a friend, and he certainly is a great contributor. And you probably worked with him, right?
I did. I worked with Andrew at the Sun-Times back in the day.
Wonderful man, and a lot of wonderful people at DNA Info who are looking for jobs today. And it's just too bad because the work they did was good work.
It is. I totally relied on it for neighborhood information. Yeah. They were great for small business news. I mean, you might not think of it as business news, but in terms of stores, you know, all kinds of restaurants.
We did opening and closing. They just would find quirky little businesses or old run businesses. And but, you know, more than that, there are people now looking for jobs to send their kids to school and all of that. So we wish them the best and certainly wish Andrew the best. So that's the way it goes in this business. We could be next. Who knows?
It is, right? I think in the media at this point, you're always shocked but never surprised.
All right, so let's hand out some awards before we go. You got your big Red Eye Awards coming up, right?
It is totally awards season right now, it seems like, right? Every couple of days, there's a new one. And Red Eye at the Tribune has its Big Idea Awards coming up on Monday, which is a fun event. We sort of get lots of entries for new ideas, which are sort of fledgling businesses. Some are already businesses. Some are more at the idea stage. So it's a little bit of a different stage. You're not going to hear about all the famous tech companies you always hear about. It's different, more emerging ideas. We have categories like food and drink, tech and apps, giving back, art and design. And in each, there's four finalists. And then attendees at the event get to actually vote. So the attendees pick the winner in this contest.
So you know who the finalists are.
I know who the finalists are.
Have they been announced?
They've been announced. Okay. You can go to Red Eye and read about them. There's everything from a happy hour platform to a meal delivery service specifically for new mothers who maybe don't have the time and energy but need to like be eating healthy foods. Some very interesting ideas. There's a candy like mold where you can make a fidget spinner out of candy, kind of a fun kid kind of craft idea. So all kinds of different things. And attendees will join us at Untitled on Monday night. And it's kind of a, you know, the science fair type expo aspect where people will be presenting their
idea. It's got a little
Red
Eye fun going with it,
too. Red Eye fun. It definitely is designed for that sort of demographic.
All right. So that's Monday night. What time?
Monday night, 6:30 at Untitled.
And people just show up?
People can, you know, you buy tickets in advance.
Okay.
And show up. And then there's food and drink. So it's kind of a little bit of a party atmosphere. And then you also get to vote on the winners.
You know, yesterday we talked to the people from the Chicago Innovation Awards. It's like, why is this award season?
It is. I know. I feel like every business event gets crammed into about 6 weeks in you know, sort of before the holidays.
Right.
So it's all happening now. Yep, that's where we are.
Explain for me this Google Doc story, because Bennett Wakenight, the great producer of this program, puts all of our schedules on Google Docs. So he's got me using that. I'm trying to use it more, but people have been noticed that they've been freezing up and someone's watching, or what's going on there?
Yeah. So there was an incident earlier this week where people started noticing their Google Docs freezing up, or they were getting locked out of them. And it's one of those things that then makes everybody go like, wait, they have access to our docs, right? We sort of think of these as private, and hopefully they're sort of private. But it's one of those things where Google is definitely looking at them. They don't necessarily say whether they're reading the content.
So why would
the
they freeze them up? Because they were, people weren't up to...
You know, I think it was a glitch. I don't think it was a deliberate thing on behalf of Google, but it was a reminder to everyone that these, you know, things that we believe are internal documents are just like everything else, subject to kind of Google...
Yeah, we hate the fact
gathering
that
information on them.
I hate the fact that they're scanning my Gmail messages until they remind me that I didn't put the attachment on.
Oh, see, so that's helpful, right? When it says like this says attachment and there
you
is
didn't
no
pull
attachment.
It in. So and that's what we're talking about, right? That's the sorts of things they scan, but they scan it all.
Yep. They know what you're doing.
Another big story this week had to do with Groupon, where co-founder Brad Keywell is leaving. Is this a big surprise?
I mean, you know, I guess surprise in the eye of the beholder. I didn't find it shocking. I do think he's focusing heavily on uptake these days.
Right.
So when Groupon announced its earnings this week, they, you know, announced that he would be leaving the board of Groupon, which he co-founded. He says to focus on uptake. And I think things seem to be going okay at Groupon. I don't think there was necessarily any connection to what Groupon's business is up
and
to.
And uptake is ambitious endeavor.
Yes.
I'm losing my words. Where they're trying to use data to help prescribe, diagnose, or prescribe more treatment for cancer patients.
So
no,
no, yeah. So
you're looking at me.
You've got your startups crossed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Uptake is the one that's sensors and like big business.
Oh,
so they
right.
have Caterpillar involved and they're like gathering data to do preventive maintenance for big things, trains, big machinery.
Well,
I actually happened to see Brad Keywell speak this week at another event because it is event season. And he talked a lot about that. And like, so what they work on is, you know, again, gathering data, putting sensors on things, and trying to do more preventive maintenance, among other things. It's complicated.
That was a very gentle correction. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Andrea, nice to see you. Have a great weekend. Tom Gimbel is in the studio. He's the CEO of the LaSalle Network. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Gimbel. LaSalleNetwork.com, right?
Yep, you got it.
Welcome back, my friend.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so so we're going to talk vacation here and the idea that bosses should encourage their workers
to
you kind of went on a solo trip this year.
Yeah, I think you should. The question is really about engagement, is what you're doing when you're gone.
All right, so when you were away, you went to Spain, right?
Yep.
Did you really go away? I mean, you're a business owner. Come on.
Yeah, no, I check my emails.
Yeah.
I mean, the hardest thing is time zones. I mean, truthfully, because you really, as a manager of people, when you're traveling and you switch time zones, then people are getting your emails at weird times.
Right.
That's part of that problem, right?
And
where
then
people wake up and they got 75 emails from you.
Exactly.
And it's really because you couldn't sleep because you were traveling.
But even though you didn't unplug, you encourage others to unplug while they're
on
vacation.
Yeah, you want them to. But the fact, the real fact is, Steve, is that when people are gone, if they completely unplug,
then
good, bad, or otherwise,
they come back.
They're better. But when they come back, they're buried.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
So the question is, how do you manage being gone? It's how well you engage or disengage when you're gone.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because I was telling you off the air, I had 4 vacation days that I haven't designated yet for this year. I just picked them, and I'm going to take a couple Mondays off. And, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take a day. I might just lay on the couch and binge watch TV and do nothing, right? But then I realized I get 400 or 500 emails a day. And if I all day long, even if I'm home, don't look at my phone, I'm creating work for myself.
Exactly right. So here's, I was thinking about this topic when I was coming over today, and we want things for ourselves that we don't want of others in our life.
Okay, right? Explain that for me.
Do you want your doctor to disengage when he's on vacation?
I guess not. No,
do you want John Fox to disengage when he's on vacation? Do you want Joe Madden disengaging right now on vacation?
No.
Do you want Theo Epstein disengaging?
So you're preaching what you tell people not to practice.
No, I think you should go away and recharge, but there's a difference between looking at your email for an hour a day, right?
Right.
And delegating things while you're gone, and not working for 8 or 9 hours a day, and managing a certain amount of things in your life.
There's a law in France, right, where they have designated...
Oh, France? I mean, France?
Wait. Oh, there's a law that if you have a company more than 50 employees, there are certain hours, I think it's maybe 5 hours a day or something, when workers are prohibited from using email, from sending emails.
Right.
Well, maybe we're
moving that way.
There's nothing wrong with a little...
I think it's great, but there's nothing wrong with liking what you do. And listen, we all want to disengage at times. We want to go into fantasy land. We want to watch 13 episodes of Ozark in a day.
I'm going to do.
I get it.
Yeah, 13 hours.
You're also, when your body comes out of, what is it, when you're trying to get rid of your atrophy, when you're trying to recover from being in the couch.
Right.
Right? Look at your phone and delete. I mean, really, a lot of what the maintenance is deleting.
It's just thumbing stuff.
It's deleting. Deleting and forward.
Okay, so a worker who doesn't take, let's say a worker who doesn't take, well, I'm going to say all of his or her vacation. Is that, do you see that as a plus or a minus?
No, it's a minus.
And no matter what?
I think you get to a certain point. There's certain companies that have 25 or 30 days vacation, and sometimes you're like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not to take it off just for the fact, but if it's a recharge day and you want to do it, or a half day here and a half, like, there's just common sense that the real
so
way
to someone use comes to you and they say, Tom, by the way, I only used a third of my vacation this year, and they think they're going to score points with you. They're not really.
Yeah, no. Sometimes I either think, A, are you being a martyr? Or B, you know what? Why don't you take a vacation? Sometimes you're like, wink, wink, take a longer vacation next year.
Right. I don't think I have ever left a day on the table, and I plan to die without ever having left a day on the table.
I know many people who are very successful who are like that, and I know others who aren't. The real thing I'll tell you is to leave it with, Steve, is one size doesn't fit all for everybody, and people who want to take every bit of their vacation doesn't make them good or bad. And people who leave 4 or 5 days, that doesn't make them good or bad. Do what works for you and makes you happy.
Tom Gimble, the CEO of LaSalle Network, thanks for coming by.
Have a great weekend.
You too. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. As we get closer and closer to a November weekend here in Chicago, we'll talk about the job numbers coming up a little bit later in this half hour. But right now, Christopher Matthews is on a phone line. He is a writer for Axios and has talked to us a time or two on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Christopher, welcome back.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say thanks for your flexibility, right? Because I think you got bumped by Sarah Sanders or President Trump or something last time we were going to have you on. So I'm sorry for that, and I'm glad you could talk to us today.
Absolutely.
All right, let's talk about the story that you wrote that really jumped out at me, a couple of them. But I want to start with the idea of these dollar stores. Now, my kids go to they're both in college, and they both go to school in southern Ohio. So I drive through rural sort of Indiana, and there's a particular stretch through rural Indiana and into Ohio to see my son's school. And I did it just a couple of weeks ago, and it struck me that in these small towns I went to that didn't have a lot of franchise stores, there almost always was a dollar store or a Dollar General. And it turns out that I shouldn't have been surprised by that at all. That looks like a real strategy on the part of these chains. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so, you know, this trend has a lot to do with the fact that in rural America in general is sort of shrinking, getting older, it's more economically depressed, and, you know, people think of Walmart as a very inexpensive store, and it is, but the dollar store is catering to a demographic that might be even a little bit worse off than Walmart's bread and butter, and so what they do is they are carrying items in sort of smaller volume than Walmart. Mm-hmm. Walmart does a smaller selection of items. So that caters to people who are really living paycheck to paycheck, don't have access to credit cards, and need to buy in maybe in smaller portions.
Your story points out that Dollar Tree and Dollar General, there are more of those stores in the U.S., 27,000, than there are CVS, Walgreens, and Rite Aid stores combined. So they're everywhere.
Yeah, and it isn't confined just to rural America. I mean, they are in many places across the country. There's lots of folks who are drawn to this kind of business model. And, yeah, there's a ton of dollar stores in this country.
All right, so when I read it first, in fact, I think you were writing from a Bloomberg story, and they quoted a source or an expert who said, essentially what the dollar stores are betting on in a large way is that we're going to have a permanent underclass in America. So I read that and I think, wow, they're sort of exploiting this, bad on them, but maybe it's not bad on them. I mean, if they're offering a product that the people can afford to buy, I don't know. Are they bad guys in this story?
Right. Well, I mean, that's very dramatic language. It's a great quote. But I mean, yeah, I think Dollar General is not to be blamed for rising income inequality or there being a poorer section of this country. And so, yes, serving these people's needs, that's something that somebody needs to do.
Right. And so maybe what they're doing, maybe they're just sort of an indication of a problem, but certainly not exploiting a problem or creating to the problem.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Well, so we'll put that there. And then one of the other things I read, and I hadn't thought about this, but you have a section about what can be done maybe to alleviate some of the problems in rural America. And if you have food stamps or food assistance programs, you cannot buy food with those over the internet. So we've got more and more sort of food being delivered via internet from Amazon or wherever, fresh food even, that people who are on assistance can't use their stamps for that. And is there a movement toward allowing that, or are there just people who are saying it should be happening, or what's going on with that?
Well, that's one, if you talk to folks in the investment community, it's one reason why they think the dollar store model will thrive, even as Amazon sort of tries to reach into these markets as well, because these folks don't necessarily have credit cards. They can't risk putting their debit card online in case something happens. And so that sort of cash-based economic life that these people are living sort of reinforces the dollar store model. So there is reason to believe that poorer folks are going to be sort of in the brick and mortar world for a while.
And is there any movement to sort of allow them to use their food stamps for buying online? I mean, I don't know what the argument would be against it, Christopher. I'm sure someone has one.
Well, you know, I'm not aware of any movement. You know, there is a lot of movement sort of on the other side to restrict how people buy food stamps. There's a lot of sort of paternalistic attitudes out there. People want to make sure that, you know, people aren't buying the wrong things. So I'm not sure, but it might be something worth considering.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about that maybe one day and find a guest or something. I read something a while ago, and I don't remember where it was, but it sticks with me because I think there's a lot to it in that rural America is now becoming sort of the inner city of America. When you consider poverty issues, drug issues, and things like that, problems that we used to assign to the inner cities of this country are now being experienced really in many parts and in greater degrees in rural America. And it's something we've got to come to terms with, and something we've got to figure out ways to bring things back together.
Yeah, and you know, one of the ironies of the modern economy is that as sort of communication tools get better, it's actually becoming more important for people to be sort of packed together tightly because it's now an information economy, it's a service economy. And so cities today are really where all the action is. They're drawing all the talented people from the rural areas, and then a lot of these places are suffering.
Yeah, I just feel like I can feel it when I drive by. I don't know. I grew up in a small town, and it doesn't. I don't see my small town out there anymore. And that kind of leads us to this other story you were writing about, this quote-unquote degree inflation, where more and more employers are now requiring a bachelor's degree to do a job on job applications, but it's not really necessarily a job that a bachelor degree for which a bachelor degree is necessary. In other words, they put it on the application, and then some poor people who don't have degrees end up wanting for jobs.
Yeah, and so I was writing about a study in which the authors studied online job postings and sort of looked at, okay, what percentage of workers today in this job have a degree, and versus what percentage of job applications say they require a degree. And oftentimes it'll be like only 20% of the workers actually doing that job have a degree, but the vast majority of job applications are asking for a degree. And so that, you know, if something used to be able to be done without a degree, there shouldn't be necessarily any reason why it needs to be done now. And of course, that imposes a lot of costs on workers who now have to pay for these expensive degrees.
And what is the point in that? Is it just a sort of a weeding out process that getting a degree shows a level of commitment or something like that? Why is it that because I also read that the employers now are paying people with degrees more money than they would if they were hiring people without degrees. So I'm not sure what the motivation is there.
Well, you know, from the employer's point of view, it is really hard to find the right person for a job. And employers are grasping at whatever tools they might they can use to sort of weed out candidates, especially now that the ease of applying to jobs online that employers are having to sift through so many more applications. And so it's a tough problem, but it's obvious that we can't afford to be paying for four-year degrees for people who don't need them.
Well, that's a good point about the ease of application, too. Christopher Matthews, read more at axios.com. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. By the way, our number of the week this week, 620,000, as in 620,000 restaurants. That's how many eating and drinking establishments there are in this country, according to the Department of Labor. And the number keeps going up. In fact, it's growing at twice the rate of population. Now, analysts say that since the early 2000s, Wall Street has considered restaurant investment a safer haven than dot-coms. The dot-coms have been blowing up, so Wall Street's investing in the neighborhood chain. Now there's a hot dog stand at every corner. Good for hungry people, but those stand owners who are finding the restaurant saturation is yet another obstacle for profit. 620,000 restaurants, and there's probably one near you right now. We'll take a break, come back, check traffic, business, and then the job numbers, all on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, first Friday of the month. That means guys like Paul Nolte, who's the Senior Vice President, Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Well, they wake up with a little extra kick in their step because the jobs numbers are coming out.
Oh, this has been a banner week for economists between the Fed and the tax report and everything else.
All right, so the job numbers, 261,000, which is people were expecting a little bit more, right?
Yeah, again, it's going to be aided by or really impacted by the hurricanes.
Right.
So we got very poor numbers last month, this month a reversal, but it was a little less than a lot of people were expecting.
So people were, I think I saw 300,000 in some. But a lot of that was that's artificially high because there were so few the month before.
Right. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the average between the 2 months, kind of smooth it out a little bit,
right,
and still kind of below trend. And one of the things that we take a look at really is the revision numbers. So when do they revise? Because they actually revise these twice. So this number that came out today will get revised again in December and then again in January. When you look at those revisions have been negative almost every month this year. They've revised downward.
Interesting.
Why is that significant? Well, a year, 2 years ago in 2015, they were revising those numbers down fairly aggressively, and the markets were generally flat to negative until they finally bottomed out in the beginning of 16, and we started seeing revisions become positive again. So it's not so much the numbers, but it's the directional revision that we take a look at.
So when guys like you wake up with a kick in your step on the first Friday of the month, it's not that big of a kick because you know that this is only the preliminary.
Economists are notorious that we use decimal points to feign precision. We really don't know what's going on.
But speaking of revisions, we should say last month the initial report was, I think, 33 or 35,000 jobs lost. That's
right.
Already been revised into positive.
So now
turf.
It's positive 90, and the month prior was essentially flat.
And with that revision up now, we've hit 100 months of economic expansion, largest since, I think, 1854.
I was not around then, but yeah, it's been a very, very long time. This has been one of the smoothest, most gradual recoveries that we've had historically.
As you say smooth, others say slow. If it had been faster, it wouldn't have lasted as longer, perhaps, right?
Because you'd have a lot more involvement with the Fed. I mean, the Fed has been involved, but they've been very easy all the way along and have been very slow to try to normalize interest rates. We're starting to see that process begin now. We're getting a little flatter yield curve, which is historically not a good thing for the markets or the economy, but we're starting to see that process unwind.
Okay, 261,000 jobs created, but the number in the job participation rate dropped again, right?
Right, right.
Explain the significance of that. Is that just because we're getting old?
There's a lot of theories around that. Again, we don't have good numbers on a good feel for that. One of the comments is, yes, there's a lot more people retiring, fewer people entering the job force. Some people are leaving permanently and just saying, you know, I can't find anything, don't want it, I'm gone. So there's a variety of factors, and I don't think anybody's really gotten their finger on what the real reason
right.
is for that.
But, I mean, that dampens the enthusiasm as well. The jobless rate dropped to 4.1%, lowest in 17 years.
Right.
But
right.
if people aren't, as not as many people are out there trying to find a job, that number doesn't mean quite as much.
Well, and that may be part of the reason why we're seeing wage growth fairly minimal. It's 2.5%. It's not getting up there. And I think, too, that has an impact on the inflation numbers that the Fed keeps wringing their hands about, too. And that's what I mean. It's been a very modest, slow recovery. And historically, we're just up to the low end of what we would normally see for a recovery.
Really? And we've been going at it this long?
And we've been going at it this long.
Okay, you mentioned the wage growth. That's why you were in here, Paul, because I'm not an expert on this. I've been doing it only a couple of years. But people kept telling me, and they've always said, you know, once the economy comes back, once the businesses start better, getting more and more profitable, you're going to see wages go up once the demand goes. It hasn't happened.
It hasn't happened. And when you take a look at the job growth and where the jobs are coming from, you highlighted earlier all of the restaurants that are being opened up.
Right.
Those typically are the low-end wages. We'd like to see the factory workers. We'd like to see the construction workers. Typically, those are much more higher paid. But what we're seeing is people entering the workforce at the low end of the scale. That, from an average perspective, tends to keep that average fairly low.
Now I'll jump into maybe this. I don't think this is politics, but let's talk about the tax reform a little bit, because I've also been, you know, I came into all of this years ago with the idea of, you know, the little guys getting jobbed all the time. I've come around to the fact that we need to revise the corporate tax rate and all of that. But I'm told that if we cut the corporate tax rate, that the workers will benefit from that, that the wages will go up. If the businesses are making money now hand over fist and the wages aren't going up, why should we expect that they will once they pay lower taxes?
It may not happen. And we've seen – no, it's true. We saw this before. We had the repatriation under – I think it was Bush. And we saw a lot of money come back. We got a tax holiday. And a lot of that went into buying back stock.
Which isn't good
for the stock price. It's good for the shareholders.
It's good for the CEO who gets a bonus based on the stock price.
Well, him too. But certainly, you know, those of us that own stocks, we benefit as well.
Right.
But you're right. It doesn't necessarily make it down to the wage earner. And so what we're looking for is we're really looking for that. And here's where I would agree with Trump is we really need to see strong economic growth where I need to build new plant and equipment in order to service the amount of demand that we have. When you look at retail sales, you look at some of those numbers, they're okay, but they're not real strong.
We were just talking yesterday about the wages that have seen the greatest percentage increase, and they're the lowest paid wages. So, of course, the percentage can go up with just a few pennies.
That's right.
Paul Nolte, the Senior Vice President at Kingsview Asset Management. Where do people find out more about you?
You can come to kingsviewam.com or kingsview.com and find us out there and give us a holler.
Nice to see you.
Absolutely.